take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. And we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care. Nahastan anila nijon le go shavothya, nijon le go shavothya. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo. Hey, hey, yo. Hey, yo, hey, yo, hey, yo.
Way, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations. music from the Blackfeet Drum Kicking Woman Singers off their Kenyan record CD, Pikuni Style. That particular song was a grand entry, heard when all powwow dancers first come into the powwow arena. Ashwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Today's program is program 2 in my special series, A Conversation with Mary Olson, an anti-nuclear activist and staff member for many years with the fine organization Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Yad Kiddushi Native Center has networked with NIRS for a long time, especially fighting nuclear issues affecting tribal communities and Native homelands. Mary Olson, whom I am honored to call my friend, is director of NIRS's Southeast Office. Mary visited Yad Kiddushi Native Center, where we spoke together about many serious nuclear energy issues. Yad Kiddushi Native Center, as an Earth Justice organization, has from our very beginning been fighting against global nuclear energy policy, nuclear power, and all the serious aspects of nuclear development, namely mining and milling of uranium, nuclear waste, weapons detonation tests, radioactive contamination of air, land, and water, poisoning ecosystems, and human health impacts, as well as the international transport of nuclear fuel and/or nuclear waste by truck, railroad, or ship. Nuclear power's long record of serious safety accidents, radiation release incidents, and violations of monitoring and operation procedures provide little assurance that a global nuclear industry can really be trusted to protect all life on the planet, now and into the future, for many generations. What about nuclear accidents at power stations such as Diablo Canyon, Shoreham, Nine Mile Point, Midland, Marble Hill, Seabrook, Davis Bess, Comanche Peak, and others I could mention? Remember Three Mile Island in 1979 and the efforts to cover up the truth of what happened by both government and industry officials? We now know that the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission in 1979 greatly underestimated the seriousness and amounts of radiation released at TMI. We now know that there were great problems with air monitors not working at Three Mile Island. 1 week before the Harrisburg, PA accident, an NRC inspector named Jim Cresswell met with two NRC commissioners, Peter Bradford and John Ahern, to express his concern that the TMI reactors were unsafe and should be shut down until the problems corrected. We know his warnings were dismissed. Some who are concerned about corporate control of nuclear power advocate governments operating nuclear power plants. Remember Chernobyl in Russia? Yucca Mountain in the Western Shoshone homeland, Nui Sogabia, now called Nevada, the U.S. government's proposed storage site of America's nuclear waste has been publicly exposed to be unsuitable for radioactive waste storage. In testimony before the U.S. Senate, the chief of the U.S. Geological Survey, scientist for Yucca Mountain, admitted that as a result of political pressure, he lied under oath about the geological suitability of the planned nuclear waste repository. U.S. Department of Energy scientists have likewise admitted to not only falsifying scientific data, but also making up information about the long-term sustainability of Yucca Mountain as a result of political pressure in order to present a favorable picture for Yucca Mountain. The economics of nuclear power generation, which disproportionately impacts the poor, is an entire topic little understood by the general public, who bears the outrageous per kilowatt costs of nuclear energy. Remember the industry's promise nuclear power would be, quote, too cheap to meter, unquote?
While nuclear policy should be of concern to everyone in many ways, nuclear issues most affects indigenous peoples throughout the world. The history of nuclear development, both for military weapons as well as for commercial nuclear power, is a history of abuse to native peoples and exploitation of our sacred territories on Mother Earth. Not only has tribal lands been raped and sacred sites desecrated for uranium mining, but many of those who worked as miners are tribal people who have had little economic choice but to labor in horrific health and safety conditions in order to support their families. Most Native workers were never told of the grave health dangers from uranium mining, nor were they given any protective clothing or equipment. As a further insult, a number of American Indian homes and schools were knowingly built with radioactive adobe, which have caused many deaths and serious illness in Native communities. Carcinogenic, mutagenic, and teratogenic birth defects in American Indian families are now well-documented exposure effects. Precious aquifer water in very arid regions where uranium is mined have been greatly overdrawn and used up. Surface and underground water as well have been seriously contaminated with radioactivity. This, of course, has caused human health problems, as well as poisoning crops and livestock, which many Native people depend upon for subsistence. As an ecologist, I've long spoken out about how radioactivity becomes part of the food web, poisoning all life. Radioactive isotopes now in the atmosphere are often transported by wind in or deposit from snow or rainfall, impacting many places on the Earth. The circumpolar Arctic, which in photographs look pristine, are now highly contaminated from nuclear fallout. A serious example is the case of the indigenous Arctic Sami reindeer people, who can no longer live their traditional herding life as a result of the Chernobyl nuclear power plant explosion, whose radiation poisoned their Arctic tundra, including their reindeer. In what is now called the United States Southwest, many tribal nations' homelands have been so wasted by the nuclear fuel cycle that sacred lands have been turned into highly toxic dead zones that are now termed national sacrifice areas. This is a situation I've seen in person and reported on for many years. An example, my work with the In Defense of Sacred Lands Project. In the traditional homeland of the Oglala Titiwan, some call Sioux Indians, Lakota communities such as Red Shirt, who have fished the Cheyenne River and used river water for irrigating their gardens for many generations, now have radioactive warnings signs posted along the river. Longtime listeners to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, have heard our 9-program interview series with Defenders of the Black Hills coordinator, Charmaine Whiteface, speak about many cultural and ecological issues affecting the Ossetic Sakawan, the Great Sioux Nation. One serious problem are the numerous abandoned uranium mines and radioactive waste in their sacred Black Hills, Pahasapa. The Midiwakantan Dakota, who are more commonly known as the Prairie Island community in Minnesota, have had to, since 1973, live next to Xcel Energy's 2 nuclear power 1,076 megawatt reactors called Prairie Island Nuclear Power Plant. In addition to the usual dangers of living adjacent to nuclear power plants, from routine releases of radiation venting into the air and toxic discharges into water, the Midiwakantan tribal community are also threatened by high-level radioactive spent fuel that are kept on-site in dry cast storage at Prairie Island Generating Station. Prairie Island is a floodplain of the Mississippi River. In the mid-1980s, my own Wabanaki Native Territory was threatened by a U.S. government-proposed nuclear waste dump to be built on Penobscot land. This was after years of fighting against the Seabrook Nuclear Power Plant that was built at a sacred coastal site we Indians call Winnemucca. The wonderful Quahog Clamshell Alliance that I and other Native and non-Native brothers and sisters were active in, although unable to stop Seabrook, at least till now, have prevented the planned nuclear waste dump being forced on Wabanaki land. The spirit of the Quahog Clamshell Alliance, which brought people of different cultures and backgrounds together to protect Mother Earth and our own human family from the insanity of developing nuclear energy, is needed now more than ever. The resurgence of nuclear power throughout the world requires people to come together again to defend Mother Earth and all life from a greedy political, economic, insane nuclear industry. One of the greatest public PR deceptions is how nuclear power is now being promoted as an environmentally friendly energy source for the 21st century, as concern about global warming is now headline news. Yad Kiddushi Native Center hopes this Wolf Mountain Radio program encourages people to fight to defend Mother Earth from nuclear energy. It's better to be radioactive today than radioactive tomorrow. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. It is my great pleasure now to welcome Mary Olson to Wolf Mountain Radio.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be sitting here with you, Ones. It's a real honor to have some of your time and the honor to be heard on this radio broadcast.
Mary, as longtime anti-nuclear activists, we both are often asked, what alternative choices or solutions are there to generating more electricity by either nuclear or fossil fuels? It is also important to mention that you and I are also against using coal for energy. There is no such thing as so-called clean coal technology. Raping more of Mother Earth for oil shale or tar sands, especially when many of those natural resources are located on indigenous peoples' sacred homelands, must also be fought against. The answer to energy needs is, of course, improving energy efficiency and renewable energy sources such as solar, wind, and under certain conditions, geothermal and hydropower. Hydropower, however, can be environmentally destructive to ecosystems, so this energy source needs to be considered with a great deal of caution. Some people consider biomass as an alternative energy source. As an ecologist, I am very concerned about current biomass production. Large amounts of petroleum and poisonous agrochemical fertilizers, herbicides, pesticides are still needed to grow industrial quantities of biofuels. There was also the issue of biofuels displacing agricultural lands needed for food production, as well as economic impacts to third world farmers as biofuel production increases worldwide. Renewable energy sources and energy efficiency as solutions to our energy and climate crisis are not new 21st century concepts. In the early 1980s, when I was studying ecology and environmental science at the University of Maine, as an internship project, I hosted an energy lecture series that included two eminent scholars, ecologist Barry Commoner and scientist Amory Lovins. Their focus on renewable energy and energy efficiency design and engineering is as important and valid now as it was nearly 25 years ago when they spoke at the University of Maine. Mary, would you please comment on alternative energy as the energy solution? Do you agree that we can have a nuclear-free and carbon-free energy future by using renewable energy sources as well as improving energy efficiency?
Well, we coined a new slogan this past year, no nukes, no coal, no kidding. And this is because we got hooked up with the whole climate issue, the climate crisis issue, and of course, the top priority in the electrical side of greenhouse gases is turning off coal plants. And an awful lot of people assume that the only way you can turn off a coal plant is to turn on a nuclear plant. Yet, that's a false equation. That's very limited thinking. That's inside-the-box thinking. From our perspective, the number one thing you need to do to turn off coal plants is to use less energy. Some people can think that that just means putting on your sweater and turning down your thermostat, which is a great thing to do. But in our book, it means, no, insulate your house. Insulate your roof and insulate under your floor and buy light bulbs that use 1/10 the power of the old light bulbs. And that's actually one good thing that Congress did this fall is the light bulb efficiency standard that will make the old-fashioned incandescent bulbs a thing of the past within 10 years. 90% of the energy in an old-fashioned light bulb goes to making heat. For reading and other activities, that heat is really just waste. And that's one of the tragic things about both coal and nuclear. When you use either coal fuel or uranium fuel, 2/3 of that fuel makes heat that is vented to our Mother Earth in the form of steam or hot water. It doesn't even make electricity. We're going to talk about nuclear waste, but I just want to point out as I go by that 2/3 of the nuclear waste that we've made didn't make electricity. It made waste heat that goes into our environment. So we're talking about global warming. All the thermal types of power have to go away. They have to stop. We've got to end it. Nuclear is hotter than coal. So in terms of the next layer, once we've reduced the amount of energy that we're using to have the same activities, you know, in Europe they use 1/2 the power per dollar in their economy. In Japan they use 1/3. So conceivably we could run an economy 3 times the size of the one we have today on the amount of power we're using, or alternately we could run this economy on energy that's 1/3 the level of what's being consumed today. And that's really important news, because when you then talk about solar energy, biofuels, wind energy, tidal energy, there's a big project here in Florida to figure out about the Gulf Stream. They want to put things that look like windmills in the Gulf Stream. Wow. Hey, if you're only trying to come up with 1/3 the power that we're using today, then it's not as big a project. People say, oh, you can't do renewable energy to replace all the coal and nuclear. Well, if we do energy efficiency first, we only have to come up with 1/3. And then I want to bring people quickly to a new book that's out and is so exciting. Dr. Arjun Makajani, he is originally from India, has written a new book called Carbon-Free, Nuclear-Free, A Roadmap for U.S. Energy Policy. And he actually was given this task by the world-famous anti-nuclear campaigner, Dr. Helen Caldicott. Helen was tired of hearing this phrase, oh, you can't turn off coal plants without turning on nuclear plants. And so she actually commissioned Arjun to spend a period of time working on coming up with a viable plan, an actual credible plan. He's a physicist and an engineer, so he's crunched the numbers. It may be controversial. There may be pieces that people would rather do different ways, but he has come up with a plan that could actually not only support the U.S. economy as it is today, but with the growth that's projected for the same period, with no coal plants and no nuclear plants, some bridging gas along the way, but no gas by 2050. And it's online in entirety at no charge, the whole book, 290 pages with appendices, at www.ieer.org. And the IEER stands for Institute for Energy and Environmental Research. And again, the author is Dr. Arjun Makajani, www.ieer.org. And if people can just realize that it's here. These technologies, sustainable technologies, are good to go. It's all a question of where we put our money. That's it.
Telephone ring, have you heard the news? Carrie and Crow's coming home to roost. Over at the plant, you know something went wrong. Take the children and run. They say they'll fix it if we only stay calm. Go back to your factories, go back to your farms. And don't you get angry, don't you lose your... nothing to fear except fear itself, and he visits the plant in a lead-lined suit. He comes out looking like courage on the evening news. Take the children and run. Take the children and run. Take the children and run. You're on the commission and you're 60 years old. You make a deal with the devil and his prophets unfold. But 20 years down the line and that little girl is in the prime of her life and her blood cells grow wild. Take the children and run. Take the children and run. Take the children and run.
From the anti-nuclear band Atomic Cafe. The name of that song was Take the Children and Run, referring to the March 28, 1979, Three Mile Island nuclear power plant accident. TMI's Unit 2, pressurized water reactor, had what the Nuclear Regulatory Commission terms a loss of coolant accident, which resulted in the release of radiation as well as a partial core meltdown of Unit 2. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yacht Kitishi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. My guest today is anti-nuclear activist Mary Olson. My friend Mary has been a staff member of the Nuclear Information and Resource Service for the past 17 years. NIRS is a fine organization which Yad Kiddushi Native Center has networked with for many years as well. Please visit their website, www.nirs.org. Mary, my next question deals with nuclear issues in Indigenous peoples. I know you are aware of the many issues that are so important to Yad Kiddushi Native Center and Native people throughout the world. I remember hearing your talk in 1994 at the Indigenous Environmental Network gathering on the Molech Indian Reservation in what's now called Northern Wisconsin, Anishinaabe in Forest Potawatomi territory. Yad Kiddushi Native Center, as a grassroots intertribal cultural, social, environmental justice, and news media organization, is of course concerned about environmental racism affecting Indigenous peoples. Nuclear issues greatly exemplify this injustice, as seen in the historic and contemporary targeting of Indigenous peoples' lands by governments and the nuclear industry all over the world. Many Native communities have for many years been victimized by nuclear development as a result of uranium mining, milling, nuclear weapons testing, and nuclear waste. In most cases, the desecration and destruction of sacred tribal lands from nuclear energy and nuclear weapons development are violations of Native sovereignty and our treaties. Indigenous peoples throughout the world have greatly suffered from the atomic age. Aborigines in what is now called Australia, just like my own Native people here in what's now called America, have had our land, water, fish, plant, animal life, and even our own people poisoned as a result of nuclear weapons testing, uranium mining, and radioactive waste tailings. I also briefly mentioned the Nuclear Free and Independent Pacific Movement, who in 1975 in Fiji issued NFIP's first anti-nuclear and Indigenous Peoples' Rights Statement for the Pacific. I had the honor to be an observer at that NFIP gathering. Earlier in our conversation, I mentioned the case of the Arctic Tundra Sami, Indigenous reindeer herders victimized by radioactive fallout from the Soviet Union's April 26, 1986, Chernobyl nuclear plant explosion. Efforts to locate nuclear waste dumps, such as the Makadi Aborigine area in what's now called Australia, the Skull Valley Goshute Indian Reservation in what's now called Utah, the Yucca Mountain site in the Western Shoshone Territory, Nui Sogabia, now called Nevada, and even the proposed nuclear dump site in my Wabanaki homeland, now called Maine, are further insults to Indigenous peoples. I remember fighting, along with other Native organizations, the congressionally established office of the Nuclear Waste Negotiator from 1987 to 1994. The U.S. Nuclear Waste Negotiator offered millions of dollars to American Indian tribal governments if they would accept a nuclear waste dump. Longtime listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio may remember our news updates about the federal government negotiator and the Mescalero Apaches. Indigenous peoples' resistance to nuclear energy, nuclear weapons testing, and nuclear waste is part of our years of resistance to colonization. It is an environmental justice issue. In 1991, I had the honor to be a member of the Indigenous Peoples Caucus and delegate to the historic First National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit that produced the important 17 Principles of Environmental Justice. Principles number 4 and number 6 refer to protection from the nuclear monster. Mary, would you please share any comments you have on the subject of Indigenous peoples and nuclear issues?
I remember Mole Lake. That was a very important gathering for me. And I want to speak to the broader question that you've given me, and I'd also like to briefly share a story that was told to me at Mole Lake. If you recall, that gathering was very pivotal time for many, many people. I had been working at Nuclear Information and Resource Service for 3 years and was there because I had been invited to start working on high-level nuclear waste by Native people who were being targeted. There were 27 tribes that had been lured into the Department of Energy's monitored retrievable storage program. It was called MRS. And Grace Thorpe was one of the people who asked me to get involved. Lance Hughes was somebody who asked me to get involved. Quite frankly, they first came and said, "Why aren't you involved?" And I said, "Well, I haven't been invited." You know, it felt to me like, what right did I have to be telling tribal people what to do about their situation? And they promptly invited me and promptly made it clear that we had a job to do in providing people with information, resources, and service, which is our job. And so I was very, very happy to then be invited to Mole Lake. And quickly, the story is that we had this whole panel about this terrible situation with trying to basically dump the worst waste in the world, the most toxic and deadly aftermath of splitting atoms to make electricity. Most people don't know that 95% of the radioactivity in the entire pile that we call radioactive waste, 95% of what causes cancer, birth defects, and all the other host of health problems, comes from one thing, and that's making electricity. Now, the waste from making nuclear weapons is terrible, horrible, and awful. So is the industrial waste, and research and medicine is not safe, I can tell you that. But those things combined are 5%. It's actually less than that now, because we haven't been making as many nuclear weapons. We've continued to make more electricity, and so 24/7 we're splitting atoms to make electric power, and that's where 95% of the problem comes from. So these tribes were looking at having this terrible situation, and we had a panel about it. And afterwards, there was a woman there from Shoshone, which is, of course, where they want to put the permanent nuclear burial site. They call it Yucca Mountain. The Shoshone name I can't pronounce, but it translates as serpent swimming west. So I've been fighting Yucca Mountain since before I was at Mole Lake, and there was a woman there from Shoshone, so I greeted her and I spoke with her. And I said, she was new to the nuclear issue. I said, well, you're going to meet a lot of wonderful people. There's a lot of really special people involved in the nuclear issue. Trying to sort of reassure her a little bit. And she said, yes, I know. The way she said it, I said, how do you know? And she said, well, it's a law of the universe. And I said, what? You know, I'm a kid from a Unitarian Episcopal background, did some training in the Buddhist world, but, you know, I hadn't heard this story before. And she told me that uranium that's in the ground is not negative, it's not positive, but people dig it up, bring it to the surface, it gets more and more negative. You put it inside a nuclear reactor and split it, it becomes one of the most negative things on the planet. And that as the universe responds, which it is always doing, it's not a question of whether it should, it will. The quickest, most immediate response, like the immune system of the body, is for the most positive people to drop what they're doing and pay attention to it. And I can say a testimonial of 17 years that this is totally true. The community of people who are paying attention to nuclear technology and its wastes are some of the most positive people on the planet. So it's good news that the universe is balancing. It is also true, however, that it is in our hands. So when it comes to this waste issue and indigenous people, one of my strongest pieces of work over the years has been to educate people where the power plants are, who are primarily not tribal people, indigenous people, that it is wrong for us as an industrialized nation to export our most deadly and terrible waste to First Nations, indigenous nations, whatever terminology you correctly say about the people who've been here all along, especially reservations. For us to target those places for our worst waste is essentially an export. And to help them understand and see the justice issues, the responsibility issues, the sovereignty issues. Because yes, tribal people absolutely must be seen as having sovereignty. Isn't it such a real shame on my soul that the government that I pay taxes to, I'm not a tax resister, sometimes I think I really have to become one, but I'm not, will only fully acknowledge tribal sovereignty when it comes to taking nuclear waste. Any other issue? No. So what has it been in the 90s? It was a way to dodge around the governors, because the governors are at least used to be elected, who knows now, but they couldn't politically survive saying yes to a nuclear waste dump. Meanwhile, they had no control over the tribal lands within their states. So you had these 27 tribes at the time I was in Mole Lake. Happily, Grace Thorpe is a big, strong woman, the daughter of Jim Thorpe, the Olympian, and she and I and a bunch of other people managed to get the word out. We had two huge fights on our hands under that program. One was in Mescalero, and then when that fight was won, the Goshute tribe in Skull Valley, Utah, was a longer fight. And interestingly enough, it was finally not the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, not the Department of Energy, but the Bureau of Indian...
I call it Bureau of Indian Abuse.
The Bureau of Indian Mostly Abuse, because in this case, they actually said that it was inappropriate for the relationship of the U.S. federal government to allow nuclear waste to go onto the Skull Valley Reservation, which, wow, we were all celebrating that day, because one of the few times in history that the correct decision was made in the light of the justice issues. It would have been so wrong, notwithstanding all the other terrible facilities in that area. The last thing I would just want to add on here, you know, this stuff is 95% of the radioactivity. It will be hazardous into the millions of years. We have effectively created new radioactivity. My dear sweet mother thought that you used up the radiation of uranium to make the electricity. But no, when you split the uranium atom, the little pieces that are left over, the little shards of the uranium atom, are things like cesium and strontium and iodine and the whole alphabet soup of elements that were not in that fuel when it was put into the power plant. They form inside the reactor core, and that's what's so highly radioactive, that it's millions of times more radioactive than the uranium. And yet, to then go back to the other end of the issue of indigenous impact, so many people died because of the nuclear hunger for uranium. And it was not only Navajo people, but that's certainly the most famous cases were the Navajo miners who got lung cancer and other cancers from being down in underground mines. But then the open pit mines. My friend Dorothy Purley lived near Laguna Pueblo in New Mexico, and I still cry when I say her name because her people were so affected by the dust blowing out of these open mines. So no matter what we do, the uranium, the image that I carry from my childhood education was that Midas touch thing. You know, Midas was the king who everything he touched it turned to gold. Well, this is the Midas touch in reverse. Everything you touch with radiation turns to lead, if you're lucky, because you've got to shield it. And we've got to keep this stuff safe from the cycles of our planet. You know, uranium is deep in the ground because life did not use it. Life did not need it. So life did not cycle it the way that carbon is cycled and water is cycled and all those other pieces of health move through the planet. So uranium is for the most part deep in the ground. And the reason for that is because our living planet, life on our living mother, doesn't need uranium. Things that life needs, like water and carbon and healthful minerals and vitamins, are cycled through the entire living system of our living web. But uranium is not needed by life, and it has therefore stayed in the ground, and that's where we need to leave it as well.
Indian legislations on the desk of a do-right congressman. Now he don't know much about the issue, so he picks up the phone and he asks advice of the senator out in Indian country. A darling of the energy companies who are ripping off what's left of the reservations. I learned a safety rope. I don't know who to thank. Don't stand between the reservation and the corporate bank. They'll send in federal tanks. It isn't nice, but it's reality. Bury my heart in wounded knee. Told us she died of exposure. scrum, they tell you, hey, honey, you can still be an Indian. Don't ask the why on Saturday nights. Oh, bury my heart in Bethany.
Listening to Yat Kedichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
The music you heard prior to our program station identification was Buffy St. Marie's classic song, Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, off her EMI record CD entitled Up Where We Belong. The U.S. Cavalry massacre of unarmed Lakota in 1890 at Wounded Knee is often considered by America as the last chapter of the so-called Indian Wars. To me and many other Native sisters and brothers, the war against Mother Earth and Native peoples in what's now called America did not come to an end in 1890. They are still continuing to this day, even now in the 21st century. The rape and destruction of Mother Earth, the desecration of Native territories, especially for energy and natural resource development by governments and corporations, exemplify this more than 500 years of colonial conquest of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. The 1973 occupation of Wounded Knee by traditional Lakota and the American Indian movement was in part due to the Oglala Sioux tribal government's deal with Washington to exploit Indian land for uranium and probable site for nuclear waste. I sincerely wish to again thank Mary Olson for not only being my guest today on Wolf Mountain Radio, but also for her many years fighting against nuclear power. In today's conversation, Mary mentioned how being an energy and environment activist allows you to meet many other special and dedicated people who are working for a better world. This has certainly been my experience, as exemplified by knowing Mary and other fine anti-nuclear activists. Listeners who wish to learn more about nuclear issues and ways to get involved, please visit the following four organizations' websites that I network with and seriously recommend. Beyond Nuclear, www.beyondnuclear.org. Nuclear Information and Resource Service, www.nirs.org. Institute for Energy and Environmental Research, www.ieer.org, and the Indigenous Environmental Network, www.ienearth.org. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Please listen next week for Program 3 of our special Wolf Mountain Radio series, Fighting Nuclear Power, a conversation with Mary Olson. Thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. We shall conclude today's program with a song by Diné Navajo singer Louis Gani, off his Canyon Records CD, Sacred Mountains. The name of the song is Generations. As listeners have heard many times on Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, we must all honor the native ethic of caring for seven generations into the future. Being an Earth Justice Warrior, fighting against nuclear power, is one aspect of this principle, especially knowing how many future generations will be affected by nuclear radiation. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kanon Wantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Let's go on, no, say so.